We are quickly approaching the end of 2024. And if you have not purchased an investment property yet this year, and it's been one of your goals, I need you to listen very closely. I know many of you live in areas where it's so expensive and investment properties seem impossible. I'm talking about some of the big cities. So LA, New York City, maybe even Seattle, Atlanta, places in Florida, and the list goes on. If you know that where you live is too expensive, I need you to lock in right now. Investing out of state changed my life as somebody living in California. I now invest in Ohio and I'm growing my portfolio. It's something that's possible. You just need the right information and execution. So if that's you, if you want to learn how to invest out of state, go to outofstatemoney.com and there is a free training that'll outline the steps for you and help you understand exactly what it takes. So go to outofstatemoney.com or simply go to the link in the description of this episode.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Black Real Estate Dialogue podcast. Here with me, I have Tanisha and Jimmy from the CEOs of Nelson Properties in the DMV area. Very excited to speak with them today, learn more about their journey. So thank you two so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. So first, tell us more about yourselves, what your childhoods were like, and what you saw, what you didn't see, that shaped your view of building wealth?
Sure. Probably for me, I think maybe similar, but we'll see. But probably more what I didn't see about building wealth. I always say to this day that my father is very good with money, in that he has it, and we've always been stable and vacationed and things of that nature. But I couldn't really tell you what exactly that means as far as investments or savings or anything of that nature. So I do think he did his best to, like, you know, he taught us how to balance a checkbook. I know how to do my own taxes, and I used to until I just didn't feel like it anymore. But, you know, so things like that, but just, you know, really saying, here's how to build wealth, here's how to invest, here's where to put your money other than a savings account, that really didn't happen.
And for me, my parents and grandparents, they just told me to go to school, get a good education, come home and get a good government job. That was pretty much it. It wasn't any discussions about wealth building. It was always, hey, save more than you spend so you can buy a house for your family. Yep. And don't use the credit card as much, but they did tell me, you know, with a credit card, you to boost your credit score, you had to pay the credit card bill off within that billing cycle so you won't be penalized. But other than that, it was just work, get a good education, work, and come back to the city to get a good government job, as all of them were in the government.
Got it. And where did you two grow up?
I grew up in D.C. in a northeast neighborhood called Riggs Park.
Okay.
I grew up in Maryland, but just right outside the city, DMV area.
Gotcha. Okay. Cool. Awesome. So what got you two into real estate? Like, what was it that you saw or maybe heard that kind of lit that spark to start investing in real estate?
I think it was something we had kind of talked about in passing before. Also, I'm, you know, huge, like a lot of people, into HGTV. And I remember years ago, like, babe, I feel like we can do this. I feel like we can be the couple that flips houses. And so I think just probably about this time, 2 years ago, we just kind of got it started talking about the potential of it and the potential of the wealth building with it as, a, you know, something more viable and not just like, hey, maybe.
Mm-hmm. And then also what drove us to get started was the nuances of student loan debt. So we were trying to use this as an avenue of finding a way to pay down our student loans, finding our way to pay off our student loans a lot quicker.
Definitely. So walk us through your first deal on your first investment property. I think I saw a post on your Instagram that mentioned that you all got your first property, I think, was it last year? Maybe a year or so ago?
It was
last year in March.
March 27th of last year. That was my delayed birthday present. So with that deal, it was something that I had to fight as far as being uncomfortable. Because prior to that, we had put in offers on 10 to 15 other houses or apartment buildings, and we were just getting outbidded. So we even got an offer accepted, but when we went to go get the inspection done and we had a contractor come out, things would divulge that it just exceeded our renovation budget. So we're continuing to go through the process. And I think I left a house that we didn't like at all. And I told her about it. And so by the time I got home, she's like, yeah, I see this house on the MLS. And all offers were due Friday night. Mm-hmm. And this was a Thursday night. So my immediate reaction was, we got to call the realtor so we can get in there to see it, try to get our contractors to come in there to see it. And she pretty much said, we don't have time for that. What do you think about putting in the offer sight unseen? And it was a turnkey property, so all the work had been done. So it's just a matter of seeing what we could offer and based on the numbers, if we could still make profit from that. So I'm like, I don't know, this sight unseen, so many things can happen. So her exact words were, we've been doing it the right way this whole time and we haven't gotten the offer. Why don't we try, step out on faith, put in this offer, and see what we can get. And if we get it, it still turns out to be not what we wanted. We have contingency clauses in our contract so where we can still get out of it. Didn't have a rebuttal after that, so I let her take the lead on that one, and we put in the offer.
And honestly, I didn't think we were going to get it. It was just like... I mean, listen, whatever. Let's just do it.
Yeah. Yep. So from there, we put it, our offer was accepted on that one.
So we went right after church to view the property for the first time.
Yeah.
It was what it appeared to be in the pictures. It was amazing. Right. So we moved forward.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And where was this property?
So that property in our... We have two others that are in a city within Maryland called Capitol Heights. So it's right on the D.C. Maryland borderline. So for those who want to get the D.C. experience but not pay D.C. prices in coming neighborhood, and portions of that neighborhood are in an opportunity zone. Mm-hmm. So we were able to benefit from that as well.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And how much was that property? Was it a single family duplex?
Yeah. So it was a three bedroom, one and a half bath, single family house. And it was all one level. And it was $200,000
even. Got it.
And I think the seller gave us some closing at
that they sold 6,000 and they gave a 5,000 to kind of fix.
You know how negotiation is. You start at the highest amount, which you don't need, in hopes you get to what you actually need.
Yeah, it worked out because our contractor told us pretty much we needed 5,000 to do the work. So we said, okay, we'll ask for 6, and they gave us 5.
So. Yeah, so it worked out. So that one was 200,000 even. And we needed some minor things of that nature. So the amount they gave us for rental covered all of that, and we were able to get that rented out at $1,650. So that covers the mortgage, and we get about $200-$300 left after expenses.
That's awesome. That's awesome. How much were you all in? Did you have to put down 25% on that one?
So we did 20. So 20. What we did for that first deal, my wife and I, she was working at the time. We have retirement accounts, which we're able to take a loan from. So from there, we split the down payment between our two retirements account, and we pulled the 20% from our retirements.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And you touched on something really interesting there, which was taking a loan from your retirement, which is something I learned about this year. Mm-hmm. You know, the way most people are brought up is, you leave that, you don't touch it, you know. One day.
You use it when you retire at 62.
That is it.
So can you Can you walk us through how you found out about that and what gave you the boldness to just say, okay, I'm gonna just take this out to invest in property?
So some of our strategies we have learned from using social media. We were able to get in contact or be introduced to a young lady by the name of Kendra Barnes of the Key Resource. And she's been a wealth of knowledge for us.
To this very day,
as of last week.
Okay, thanks, Kendra.
And then a couple by Kara and Khalil from Charm City Buyers.
Right.
And the Hood Estates couple, we've met them. We've been in their seminars, taking their courses. And just from all that they've been willing to share, especially Kendra more than ever, we got some of those strategies from them. And so we had the opportunity to use our retirement. I was like, all right, well, we're going to use it to acquire another asset, not go buy a car or anything of that nature, but something where it was going to bring us money in return.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I like the fact that, you know, you two decided to take courses, educate yourself, and make the investment of time and money to learn before jumping in. And I feel like people are hesitant to do that kind of thing, and they kind of go into it with skepticism if someone's selling a program, when in fact you two are an example of that kind of thing working. So can you talk about more about that and just the value of investing and educating yourself before getting into any type of investing, particularly real estate? Sure.
When we first started, we went and got mentors. So come to find out, after telling people what we wanted to do, I have a cousin who's has been big into investing in buildings and single family houses, which I didn't know about till another family member had referred me to him. Then her sister, her sister's father-in-law, he's a big investor throughout the DC Maryland area for what?
Many years.
40 years now. And he started at 25, like he's in the mid-60s now.
Wow.
So we went and talked to both of them, just asking questions and just trying to get our feet wet as far as where to go. And I remember they both said, you all need to do some research, start reading, getting involved in local real estate investment clubs, and just learning. So from there, we got in contact with Key Resource, Charm City Buyers, Hood Estates, and we started looking up other real estate meetups throughout the city. And I think now I go to about 3 or 4 real estate meetups a month, just networking with other people. One has a speaker that comes in, talks about different topics on real estate investing. Another is just a big networking event where you just can talk to people. And I'm always a proponent of learning from other people's mistakes or failures and seeing where we can make those adjustments so we don't have to take that avenue. And then with the courses online and the books, I mean, we just love them. Like, the people I named, Key Resource, Charm City Buyers, and Hood Estates, they give you all the examples of what they went through so we can avoid those failures. And then they have the information readily available on their webinar platform so we can go back and read it and look through it whenever we need to again.
That's awesome. And something else that I've seen just kind of looking on Instagram and folks are doing really well in real estate, one theme I see is marriage, strong marriages and really working with your significant other and your spouse to build. So can you talk to us more about your story and how you got on the same page as far as investing in real estate and how you two being together, being married and working together has helped to grow your portfolio?
I think for sure, just automatically, that is kind of one of the benefits of being married is that if you're doing it the right way, you're on the same team to start with. So whether it's real estate, an ice cream shop, stocks, whatever, there's a common goal at the end, no matter what. If we were two separate people, not married, maybe his goal is student debt and my goal is I'm a single mom and I want to do something here. Well, if something strikes my interest to the right, something strikes his interest to the left, we may separate. But when you're married and you're really working as a team, our interests are the same. So even if our ideas or, you know, things come up where, like he said, he wasn't necessarily for getting that first property sight unseen. But when you know the other person has your best interest, then you're able to say, okay, cool, we'll try it this way. Things have come up where I've been like, I'm not sure about this. This seems like, I don't know. But I'm able to say, okay, cool, if this is the way you want to go, I'm down. Because at the end of the day, I know we're going in the same direction. We're spending the same money. We're raising the same children. So the things that we want this money to do for us are the same. So I think that makes the partnership just easier and more trusting. And then I think just with anything, it's always great to have someone to lean on and who you feel like has your back. When the work gets hard, when you have things going on at once, we were showing two properties at one time, doing open houses. So, you know, he did open house Saturday, I did an open house Sunday. It's just kind of that built-in teamwork when you're doing something with your partner or with your spouse.
And also it makes it easier as far as business meetings go. You know, if you have a person who's outside your marriage, y'all have to plan something. I mean, our business meetings are pillow talk, man. I mean, so many ideas are talked about and discussed right before bed or when we're laying in the bed having that pillow talk, man. So it's I wouldn't trade it for the world.
Yeah. Definitely. That's powerful. I think it's very inspiring and powerful just to see a couple who's just working towards their dreams and investing in real estate. That's definitely awesome. So from the time where you all started taking courses, going to meetups and things to buying your first investment property, about how long would you say that time was?
6 months.
I feel like from the time, so I would say it was maybe about 6 or 7 months of us kind of just soaking in the knowledge, still putting in the offers. We were putting in the offers from day one. We went in putting in offers, and they were very lofty goals we had that did not come to fruition. But we were doing it. And so it was all kind of simultaneous. So probably about 6 or 7 months before we got our first win.
Yeah, but every day I know I was doing research or Googling or taking a course, and time just escaped us. Like, for example, I would come in, help her put the kids to bed at night, or she'll say she got it, and I'll start reading or doing research or getting on the course at 8:30, and I'm so engulfed into it, it's 2:30 in the morning. Then I have to get back up to go to work at 5:30.
And that's one thing I will say, as much as, like he said, you know, especially Key Resource, Charm City Vibes, Hood Estates, there's been others, but those have been like really integral. But as much as we have gotten from them, there's been a lot more solo work. And I think you cannot beat your own hard work and due diligence. You really can't. You can't get around that. You can't bypass that. It's always going to be the things that you retain directly or the things that you're doing, getting out there, you know, hitting the pavement, getting the work done yourself. I think those things are really invaluable.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And what I appreciate about that is, you know, a lot of people just get stuck in analysis paralysis. They just research, and they never do. And you two took the first step in less than a year. So that's awesome. And how many properties do you all have now?
So we have four. So in that total of 7 doors. So we have 2 single family houses and a townhouse all in Capitol Heights. And we have a 4-unit apartment building in Southeast DC.
Awesome, awesome. And how did the next couple of deals come together?
The second deal was actually the same as the first, where not really looking for that. I think at that, we were looking for a multi-unit, really.
We were at a multi-unit.
Yeah.
And then walking back to the car, she said she didn't want to go see it. It was completely dismantled. Like, the roof was caved in. The only thing that was there was the wall. So I'm like, all right, this is opportunity. So as the realtor and I are walking back to the car, she said, hey, just popped up on the MLS, what, 10 minutes ago.
Yeah.
I wrote to say you want to go see it. It was a matter of about a 15-minute drive away from where we were. Like, yeah, she called the seller. We went to go see it right there.
We were the first ones to see it. So the seller immediately was like, hey, listen, if you guys want it, I'm going to work with you guys.
And she put it as pending so nobody else would bid on it for us.
Wow, that's awesome. And now you said that was a multi-unit?
No. So that was the second property, which was a single family house. Family. This one was 4 bedrooms, 2 full baths, and it was a 2-level.
Got it.
And that one was the one that's actually in the opportunity zone.
Got it. That's awesome. And did you have to do any renovations on that one?
Yes, through inspection, we found, I think it was a list of 10 things.
It was a lot of things, because it was clearly a house that had been flipped. So I think they were kind of like doing bare minimum. So it was a laundry list of little behind the wall things that needed to be done. So the seller fixed some, and the rest that she didn't fix, we went ahead and took care of after closing.
Got it. And how much were you all in when you bought that property?
With that one and the apartment building, we wind up using equity. So I have my grandparents' house that I grew up in that I was left. So we opened up an equity line of credit. So we were able to take the down payment from that to purchase the second house. And I want to say
25 or 20%.
That one was 25%
down for the second one.
Yeah.
Got it. And how, can you walk us through like renovations? Like how much did you have to spend on renovations? How did you get a team together? Because something that a lot of people seem to be afraid of is a home that needs work and just not knowing what to do or having the expertise and all those things. So can you walk us through how you approach that?
Well, renovation wise with this one, you know, you always get an inspection. So that will already tell you right there were some things that have malfunctioned with the house. They were pushing it as a turnkey. So painting, kitchen, cabinets, all of that had already been done and looked, you know, gorgeous, but there was miscellaneous things that still needed to be done. So through networking, one of our mentors, who my sister-in-law's father-in-law, his brother, they have a construction company. So we used them to do the knick-knack work that needed to be done as well. Also, I have a cousin that has a construction company. So it's just, you never know who around you is doing what unless you ask. So we used them to do the work. And I think that came about $5,000.
Yeah, I think the most costly thing was that there was water damage in the basement. And it had to do with the fact that the flower bed in front wasn't graded properly. So it was like a couple thousand for them to dig all the way down to regrade it all so that the water flow would
flow
stop
away from the house.
Yeah, that was probably the biggest thing. But again, although we wanted the seller to pay for that, she didn't. And we felt like, you know, long term, is this like $4,000 going to keep us from the long term investment of this home? No.
Right. That's awesome. And one thing I picked up is that, you know, a lot of people get secretive about what they're doing, but you all shared with family, with friends, and we're able to now find people who do construction, find people who do a variety of things who can give you advice. And simply by sharing what you're doing, what your goals are, it was able to expedite things and help you all as you grow your portfolio. So I think that's really great.
Jack, someone on social media said one time, you can't find deals or get a leg up on anybody or get help with deals if you don't tell people what you're doing. So you gotta shout it from the mountaintops.
Absolutely. So then you are upgraded to multifamilities.
Yes.
Talk to us about those.
So that was all on the best realtor in the world.
So now the asset.
So now the listener. So we were at work. And so that was our goal starting out. You know, we wanted a multi-unit, but in DC, they're either priced high or there's several offers being put on them, as we lost out on quite a few being outbidded, people just putting down cash offers for these buildings. So our realtor still had a search going on for us for a multi-unit. And she called us one afternoon and said, hey, this multi, this four unit in Southeast just popped up on the market and the seller's agent listed it wrong. So it wasn't listed as a multi unit. So we're like, okay, opportunity. I'll be in an hour and put in this lead slip. And we went to go see it and it was doable. It's two bedroom, one bath in each unit. And the basement has potential to turn into a washroom and another two bedroom unit. So we put in our offer that night. And I think what we do in our offer is we have an escalation clause. So that's what you can, you're still in the game if somebody outbids you. So you have a peak at which you will go, at which you agree that you will put down, but it escalates in a certain increment. So ours go up to 5,000 increments above the last offer. So we did that. I think the escalation kicked in because somebody else had put in an offer, but we were determined that we were going to get this one as long as the numbers still made sense. Yeah. And it worked out in our favor.
That's awesome. That's awesome. How much was that one?
So we came to 540 all in, and total wise with the reno, the total loan came to 625.
Cool. And is the cash flow on that one pretty good as well?
So we're actually renting, trying to get renters in that one as we speak.
Oh, cool. Oh, so that's very new. That was really new.
Yes. So the one you probably saw us rent advertising for rent.
Oh, got it. Okay.
The thing is, it's a bit of a cautionary tale because it's not super new. We actually purchased it in November of last year.
Yeah. Okay.
But what happened from there is that we went through three contractors. So we didn't get a contractor to actually start on the work on the building until May of this year.
No, it was the last Friday in April.
Yeah.
of this year. Yes.
So he finished up work. He did an amazing job. He was awesome. But it took us a lot to get to him, which delayed, you know, us quite a long time.
Yeah. So the key with that is you got to make sure you have capital for all of those holding costs.
Have to be prepared. Right. Because it was a total, it wasn't a gut. Structurally, it was fine. But everything cosmetic had to go. Floors, paint, you know, cabinetry, just everything.
Got it. And talk to us about the contractors and just the journey to find the right one.
Yeah, so we had two. One we were waiting on, and I just, you know, we just couldn't wait anymore based on all the projects that they had. So we had to cut ties with them. And then the other one, he got hung up with his license with D.C. License in Maryland. He was on the verge of getting his license in D.C., so like, and if we knew all of these people as well, and he got tied up with DC government and their process. So we couldn't wait for him any longer. So, you know, through networking, our inspector, he recommended this third contractor. So we wound up going with him and he was able to get started. And like that Friday he started, they gutted out half of two apartments in one day. So it was like, all right, man, we got to get moving with this.
Absolutely. And so you all self-managed, is that correct?
Yes.
Talk to us about what that's like, because it seems to be a camp who's kind of, you know, go with the property manager for various reasons, maybe the long distance or different reasons, and then those who self-manage. So talk to us about the reason you all decided to self-manage and also the reality of self-managing in your experience.
Well, my wife was able to resign from her job last June or July. So that gave us more time to be able to self-manage. But at the same time, through learning, you learn the ins and outs of screening and the check-ins every 3 months. So, you know, we have our processes set up to where we can do it ourselves and eliminate that line expense of having a property manager. Especially, you know, we don't live that far from all of the properties. So it's nothing to be able to go there. And then paying their rent online and submitting any type of maintenance requests, all of that is electronic process now.
That's awesome. And is there a particular system you use to just keep everything organized, like the request and the payments and all those things?
So we use Cozy.co for the rental payments and for them to put in their maintenance requests. And then we use Stessa. It's an app and it's an online platform to where you can log all of your expenses for that property, as well as the cash flow coming in for that property as well too.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And what has been your most challenging tenant experience?
I don't even know if I could call it a tenant experience, but we're kind of in the middle of that right now. The townhouse that we acquired, we inherited a tenant that we should not have inherited. So we've been trying to, we got that. That was the last property we acquired, and we got that the end of May.
Yeah, that was an off-market deal from our mentor.
Yes, and the tenant that's in there is now a holdover tenant that we have asked to leave many times. We have done notices to vacate. The previous owner did a notice to vacate. We actually ended up having to proceed with an eviction, which we went to court for maybe 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And so now we're having to proceed with an actual physical eviction by the sheriff with an eviction team. So I think that would be it.
Yeah.
Got it. Well, it's good you got that out the way early.
Good crime.
Absolutely. So what do you all see for the future? Like, how do you want to just buy as many properties as you can? Are you still putting out offers? Like, what's the plan for the next couple of years and moving on?
So yeah, we always have our eye out for offers. Mm-hmm. We're trying to get this apartment building fully rented. Mm-hmm. And then from there, we are definitely going to start going forward with trying to put down more offers and repeat the process. Like she's resigned. Right. So she worked for our company. So I'm hoping to retire earlier than what they have me scheduled for. I'm trying to enjoy life and the fruits of my labor before 62.
well before
62. So I have to give the government the deuces sooner than later. So we want to make sure we have properties in place that are able to, we're acquiring rent that's covering all our personal expenses.
Absolutely, absolutely. And can you talk to us about your careers, what you did before working with the company full-time and what you currently do?
Sure. I work at a law firm in recruiting. So recruiting the attorneys and that such. And I enjoyed it, but it was also...
There's a pause there.
It was a lot of work. It was a lot of work and a lot of hand-holding, and it was just a lot for something where someone else is telling you, okay, here's your job and this is all you can get for it. So he can attest to the fact that, you know, depending on the season we were in and things like that, sometimes it would be like 2 a.m. and I'm at work doing work. So if I'm at work doing work until 2 a.m., I want it to be because every bit of money that comes in is my money. Not because, again, someone else is saying, okay, Tanisha, here's your paycheck and here's this non-acknowledgement of all of these extras you've been doing.
Yeah, and so I am an information system specialist at the FDIC. I've started there as an intern when I came back home from undergrad. Started grad school here to get my MBA and started my internship up there in 08, and I've been there ever since.
Awesome. And also, you all have an LLC, right?
Yeah. Well, we have two apartment buildings and its own entity. Okay. And our company is Nelson Properties Acquisitions LLC.
Got it. So this is another thing I want to touch on. So there seems to be two camps. One camp, you know, do everything to an LLC through an LLC, and the other camp, just doing through their names. So people seem to be confused about the benefits, the pros and cons of each. So can you talk to us about why you decided to go the LLC route?
So again, this isn't legal advice, but this is how we did it.
Yeah. Nice disclaimer.
So to be honest, we acquired the properties through our personal name just to quickly get the deal done. But they've been switched over to the LLC afterwards. And the benefit of the LLC is so people can't personally attack our personal, so people can't come after our personal assets. The LLC gives you that type of protection to where they'll have to sue the company name first. And if they win, they tackle the LLC's assets before they have to come to ours. And then there's several tax benefits would be found after this first year of having a business or having multiple registered businesses. I mean, it's like, I didn't realize it till I started researching before last tax time, how many things you can actually
write off
on your taxes. And reading this, I see how Warren Buffett and the rest of the affluent out here in the world are paying less taxes than the middle class citizen.
Even the president, who shall not be named.
I think I know. I might know who he is.
Yeah. You know. Maybe. Yeah.
But we're going to keep this on the positive.
Yes.
Yeah, there's so many benefits to having your business registered as a LLC, S Corp, C Corp, or whatever your business is. There's benefits from it. So we didn't go through the rigmarole of waiting to get LLC for a certain property, then going after it. The deals presented itself. So we took advantage of it and got our names off of it after the fact.
Got it. So you got the funding, all that under your name, and transferred it over to the LLC?
Yes. Because remember, our funding came from retirement accounts home equity line of credits.
Got it. And is the funding different? So for example, let's say for your next property, you decide to create it. Let's say, just for the sake of the example, you create an LLC for this particular property before you go and get it. Could you still get a mortgage through the LLC? Like, how would that work?
You can. It comes into play where if you have a new LLC, the banks are still going to look at it the way they would if you walked into the bank. You have to have some type of credit history. Our LLC wouldn't have a credit history. So more than likely, if we created a new LLC for a property, they're going to be like, yeah, no. The same way they would say no if some 21-year-old came in with no credit and wanted money from them.
Or they'll probably ask you for a personal guarantee.
Yeah.
Got it. So,
but again, we tell people don't let that stop you. You do what you have to do to get that deal. And then from there, you can always change things out as far as the public record goes.
Got it. That's very helpful. And what was your biggest fear going and getting into real estate and kind of pulling the trigger on that first deal?
Losing money. So I'm very conservative, and that's how I make my decisions.
Bounce each other up.
So opposites definitely attract.
Caution to the wind. No.
Yeah. So just that fear, and I mean, you get that discomfort of, oh, I don't know if I want to do this because we're not getting anything. And so she's helped me with this, that embracing that uncomfortable feeling, that fear, that uncomfortable feeling, that's your body letting you, God letting you know that you're doing something that you haven't done before. And so any decisions we make or any deals we go, if we're not going that hard and getting that feeling, that lets me know, you know, we become comfortable. So I would say just stepping out, doing things that we weren't comfortable with. Well, I wasn't comfortable with. So that's where I leaned on my wife a lot. She was the shoulder I needed to build me up on that aspect.
Absolutely. I mean, how much do your, I'm not sure how old your kids are, but how much do they know about what you all are doing in real estate?
So we have a 8-year-old and a 3-year-old. Okay. The 3-year-old, of course, she just knows, oh, mommy and daddy are going to their houses. But the oldest one, she knows because she writes about it in school now. So when she was in first grade 2 years ago, when we first started this journey, we had her going every place with us. And I also take her with me when we go feed the homeless. So she wrote in class one of her assignments the way I was reviewing her work when they came home at the end of the week is what you want to do when you grow up. So she said, I want to make a lot of money so I can buy houses to put the homeless people in. So at that moment, we knew we were on the right track of showing them, you know, other things in this world besides just going to school, getting the 9 to 5. We want to show them that, look, there's options out here. You can go to the 9 to 5 and still create other streams of income. You don't have to go your 9 to 5 route. You can create your own business, but mom and dad will be the bank. You don't have to go in debt going to go to school for student loans and be like mom and dad. So we're just trying to inundate them as much as they can. So the oldest one is well aware of it. We talk about terms in the car and drives on assets and liabilities. Wow. And we break it down to where she understands it. So she knows.
Even the court case, we talked to her about when we went to court.
Yes.
Because we got out of court right in time to pick her up from school. So, you know, talk to her about that. They go with us to everything. When we look at houses, when we purchase them, mm-hmm. when we have the inspection done, when we do open houses. So I think the only thing the oldest one has never been to is a closing.
Yes.
Just because that normally happens when she's in school. Mm-hmm. But the youngest one, though she knows not what's happening, she's been to all the classes.
And then with our, we have meetups that we host. We bring them to them and mm-hmm. they walk around talking to people and they watch their iPads, but they're in that environment.
Right. They're around it.
Absolutely. That's so powerful. By the time they're 16, 18, they'll probably be buying their own properties.
Yes. Yes. That first apartment building is hers. So
yes, we did tell her.
We're starting
that.
Off early. Wow.
That's amazing. And you know, a lot of the other races, this is what y'all are doing. That's the norm for them. And so mm-hmm. I'm excited for you all that for your kids, that's going to be the norm for them. Just assets and having properties. But you know, by the time they're 18, 20 years old, y'all will probably take over DC by that time. I'm trying to speak it into existence.
Yes, but you're absolutely right. Other nationalities do it all the time. Mm-hmm. I read a book called The Seven Jewish Phenomenons, mm-hmm. and it angered me at first because it talked about how the Jewish community teaches their children the household finances at 9, 10, 11 years old. And from there, they're growing up. By the time they're 18, they know accounting. They know how to balance checkbooks. And they know how to conduct business.
They know where to put their money.
Yes. And so I'm like, man, why didn't I have these conversations? Or why didn't my parents and grandparents have these conversations with me? Then as I kept reading, it discussed how generations of Black people weren't given this information. So we work to a certain level and we teach the next generation what they knew. Then that generation worked more and they learned more, but they taught that next generation what they knew. So it's when it came to me, parents and grandparents, our parents and grandparents didn't know that information to teach us. So now that we were able to, our parents put us in a position where we are, it's our duty now to teach our kids what we failed to not get as kids.
Absolutely. Wow, that's powerful. And as far as our people, what do you think are some things holding us back from pursuits such as real estate investing? Because, you know, something people want to do, people have interest in, but it also seems that our attention is collectively is drawn just to things that are not important. Why do you think that is, in your opinion and from your experience?
I think it's a cultural thing in general where because these are things we haven't had, there are things we don't know to have, if that makes sense.
That makes sense.
And I think too, even speaking about, you know, our parents, I look at both of my parents are from South Carolina. And my grandfather was an entrepreneur and put 7 kids through college and all of that. Wow. But when you look at being a Black person in the South, my grandfather's pride and what he felt good about was that he was able to send all 7 of his children to college. Wow. So from college, you're Black, you're from the South, you know, my dad, you're a man. It's not necessarily looked at like, go be entrepreneurial. It's looked at like, hey, assimilate, get a good job, be corporate. I think just the things that we're able in this time to do at our age and other people our age that are celebrated, I don't think that would have been celebrated then. I think that would have been looked at as you being an other. And that's the last thing you want to do as a Black Southern man is be an other. You want to be someone acceptable that, you know, isn't having people come after him or think he's different, especially, you know, white people, things of that nature. So I think then in turn, those became the things that my dad, you know, thought were important for us, not necessarily entrepreneurship or doing your own thing, but stability and own your home and have this good career with a steady paycheck. So I think it's a hard question to answer in a soundbite, but I think it really is. It's so deep, it's so generational, and I think it just has so much to do with what we didn't have as an entire community. Some people did, you know, the exception here and there, but as a community, this is not what Black people had and what Black people did, so then we didn't know to have it and do it.
Yeah, I think it boils down to knowledge and to be honest, and not us as a people banding together. There's been so much put in place that tears us apart as a people to where we're all constantly battling against each other that we don't have the time to be knowledgeable on things because there you have people who are set up in Section 8 and they don't have time to gain this knowledge because they're working two or three jobs to feed their kids. So this we've been put in a certain economy to where we have to always struggle and fight. And we're one of the fights are putting ourselves against one another. Whereas you see, like, again, all these other nationalities, like the Jewish community, they're coming together, creating funds to where those communities are lending money for their kids to go to school and things of that nature. So we have to eliminate that taboo in every Black household of talking about finances. I know we talk, as kids, we ask our parents, hey, how much do you make, mom and dad, or how much is this? Stay out of grown folks' business.
Yep.
you heard that too, right?
Yep, absolutely.
Man, we tell our kids everything. We gotta eliminate that taboo. And it's a lot of that in the Black community. So we have to start with one, sharing knowledge with each other. Look, there's several properties, land, and several ways to earn passive income or create other streams of income. We all can eat out here. So one, we can get that stereotype out of our head. Two, just come together and just build together and just not fall for the manipulation that they're constantly putting on the radio or on the TV that it just pulls us further apart. I can go on all night about that topic.
it's an important thing. It's an important thing. Is there any real estate strategy that you're curious about that you think you may try further down the line?
Yes, I'll let her answer that one. You want to do flips?
Oh, yes. I've been wanting to do flips forever. We almost, prior to us getting our first property, the successful property we got, the property we first landed on in DC that was offered to us, we were gonna flip it. But that's the one that it turned out it was way, way too much work when our inspector went in, like we were gonna have to be doing stuff with pipes out on the street. And we're like, okay, there's no money in this if we do all of that. So that was, you know, we were almost going to do a flip. But yes, I would love to do a flip. Again, just for my HGTV heart. But also just, I feel like, you know, we have these properties that we're using for long-term wealth. So it would be great to maybe do some quick properties to get some of the quicker cash flow to just put a large amount directly on student loans.
Definitely. And tell us more about the meetups that you all host.
Yeah. So we since I go to tons of meetups, I was trying to find something to where you create an environment to where everything you may need as you're starting out as a real estate investor is there. So we don't have where it's a speaker coming to just talk about somebody, talk about a certain topic.
No presentations.
No presentations and things of that nature. And we're not knocking them at all, because those are great. I go to those all the time. But
we're going next month to Charm City Buyers.
Charm City Buyers. They have their meetup.
Shout out.
So ours is, we create that environment. We also do it with Torrance from HBCU Realty. And we invite contractors, real estate agents, anybody that you may need in that profession of being a real estate investor. We have them come out. From who else have we had? Lenders.
Inspectors.
Yeah. So we hosted at Culture Coffee 2, which is a Black-owned coffee shop, which in the neighborhood I grew up in Riggs Park, D.C. And we just have everybody come out. We introduce ourselves. We've incorporated trying to show people love if they've had their first, second, or third deal recently, and invite them up to come up and speak. And we had a couple that are friends of ours who spoke at our last one about two deals they're doing now. Where
simultaneously.
Wow. Doing a flip in Baltimore and a flip in Memphis. So we just have tons of people come up to talk and encourage them to network, share the good, share the bad, be fully transparent with them, because you never know what you can learn from just talking to someone else.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I like that you're using everything you've learned and organizing something that would be applicable to someone who's brand new and just trying to get to know, you know, vocabulary, contract, just everything.
Yeah.
And then also, of course, like, bringing all that foot traffic to a Black business. That's awesome.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Trying to keep the dollar. Even with that, we have other businesses come and do pop-up shops that night as well. Mm-hmm. So I have best friends that have a health and wellness company, mm-hmm. and they have juices and juice cleanses. So they've been a constant pop-up company there. Mm-hmm. And we have my goddaughter. She has a button company. So she posts, she's done a pop-up. And this past one, we had a gentleman who had balloons.
DC Balloons.
It's one or the other. The store owner, she met him that week and, you know, hey, tell him come on. And so he set up a display. So at that night, that dollar went threefold.
That is incredible. I forgot what the stat is, but long story short, like, our dollar stays in the community maybe a couple
Six hours. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
So it's time we have to dispel those myths. So
absolutely.
We create opportunities to do that.
Absolutely. Y'all are doing an excellent job at that. And what is one piece of advice you would give to someone who just has an interest in real estate? They're not sure maybe where to start, but they know they heard about it. They heard real estate is good to get into. What is one piece of advice you would give them to start their journey?
One piece of advice for someone new. I think I would have to say to either start with attending meetups, because again, like we said, with our meetups, you don't have to already be in real estate. You can come and just be asking questions. Or I would also say, even though we've mentioned them already, but I think it's true, like, starting with the key resource and Charm City Buyers, I think they're very, especially the key resource, I think she's a great resource. If you're novice, there's so many things that so many of her eBooks and things like that and courses that we got early on that weren't even applicable at the time. Like, I think we got her, I think, was it Zero to Multi, about multi-units, and we did not have a multi-unit at the time. That was just what we wanted when we read it. But then when we actually purchased our multi-unit, it was like, oh, this is in here. So I think honestly, if you're kind of just looking for everything in one place, they're a really great resource. But I also think it's really important to attend those meetups. There's so many things, cozy.co that we use for our tenants to pay their rent and record keeping and all of that. We learned about it at a meetup. So I think it's just really important to get out there and engage people. And a lot of them too, Hood Estates, Charm City Buyers, The Key Resource, there's a lot of information they provide that's just free. There are a lot of courses that they have that are just free. If you follow them on Instagram, they do a lot of Instagram stories and you're just getting free information.
I took a lot of notes from just Instagram lives.
It's really one of those things about, I think if you're new, the real goal is to just be engaged. Wherever you may be engaging, really engage. Be it your own research on your computer, stay up, do your research. Be it, you know, people's Instagram lives, then listen. Every time they do a live, get on, listen, take your notes. If you're able to afford courses, get a couple of the courses. So I think you if this is really what you want to do, just get engaged and do your due diligence.
Yeah, I would say get a mentor and become knowledgeable on whatever it is you want to do. Become knowledgeable so you're that subject matter expert.
Absolutely. And are there any books you recommend that have helped you along the way in real estate or otherwise?
There's one book, my favorite book that I love, and it's pretty much on the mindset of being a millionaire. And I read it when I was in grad school. It's called The Millionaire Next Door. And I can't remember how I came about finding this book, but this book changed my mindset on finances and everything and how I went about doing things with that. So I love it so much. I started buying the book and giving it to other interns at my job. So that's the main book that stands out to me that helped me get to where we are at this point, just in life in general.
Awesome.
For me, I'm not a huge book person. I'm more podcasts because I'm home with the business and a three-year-old. And my three-year-old boss is bossy. So little time I have is more so for listening. But it's a podcast that I love. It's not strictly real estate, but it's just, I think, a wealth of information and knowledge just about money and all things. They cover real estate, they cover investing, and it's it is called, oh my gosh, did I just lose it? Hold on, let me look.
Yeah, of course.
Well, while she brought up podcasts, I found Todd Millionaire. He has a podcast that he hosts with Rashana Scott now. Mm-hmm. And that's been helpful for us. And we actually were interviewed on his podcast, episode 86.
But, oh, nice. I'll check that out.
Shameless plug.
But he has tons of, even before we were on there, we were listening to it. He has tons of Black investors on there. So that seeing people doing what you want to do that look like you, that's a huge motivator.
Absolutely. Yeah, I listen to his podcast at least two, three times a week on the way in from work. It's good stuff for sure.
Okay, so the podcast is Choose FI. So yes, it's Choose FI. It's a financial independence podcast. So it's literally just talking about money and becoming financially independent in every way possible. And the two hosts are, they're two white men, but most of their guests are not other white men. Most of their guests, from what I've listened to, it seems to be a lot of minorities. There are a lot of people that are in real estate that are Black, people that are just not necessarily American, Middle Eastern, things of that nature. And it's just so many different perspectives about how best to steward your money and how best to not be a slave to your incoming paycheck. And so there are a lot of them on there that are specifically geared towards real estate, but I think it's just honestly good information about money that I think our community really, really needs.
Absolutely, absolutely. And where can people find you if they would like to connect with you, if they're in your area or would like to connect with you online?
Well, we're at on Instagram at Nelson_properties. We're on Facebook. You can find us at MPA Homes. We have our website, which is mpahomes.com. And if you see us on IG, you'll see we'll post our meetup, which is every other month. So our next meetup will be in November.
Perfect. Perfect. Awesome. Well, thank you both so much for coming on the podcast. I'll definitely include all the information in the show notes. We appreciate it. It's amazing just to see a Black couple doing their thing. So I really, really appreciate you two.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for taking the time to interview us.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
If you're a maintenance supervisor for a commercial property, you've had to deal with everything from leaky faucets to flickering light bulbs. But nothing's worse than that ancient boiler that's lived in the building since the day it was built, 50 years ago. It's enough to make anyone lose their cool. That's where Grainger comes in. With industrial-grade products and dependable fast delivery, Grainger can help with any challenge, from worn-out components to everyday necessities. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.